Hey, it's Ty. This morning for Writer's Rule, Trey Bruce was nice enough to come in and chat about songwriting. And I've mentioned this before to you, Trey. What it is about songs that I love is knowing why they were written, that message that was kind of intended to be conveyed. And then, you know, from there, artists sometimes will take it and they have another message in their mind. But I'm always like, how did those lyrics or that music originate in the first place?
Okay.
Regarding you, it's a really interesting and fascinating thing to me that you drop what you're doing, which was kind of one kind of music, and you moved to Nashville. So that'll be part of the story that we tell this morning.
Okay.
But first, some of the music that you are associated with. Faith Hill, for instance.
She was daddy's little girl, mama's little angel, teacher's pet, had young things she said.
I'm pretty sure people know every word to that song.
Probably.
And then you flip everything on its head. You've worked with ZZ Top.
You let me land down on the floor.
Okay, let's go Randy Travis real quick.
No chains, no strings, no fences, no wall, no net, just you to catch me when I fall. Look hard.
I love that one, man. And I asked you earlier, I said, who stands out in your mind sometimes? Like, who do you maybe naturally gravitate toward when you're thinking of your favorite music? And Randy Travis is the name you said.
Yeah.
So, Trey, what is your background, though? Where did music start for you?
Well, I was born in Memphis, and I stayed there until my early mid-20s. And I played drums in rock bands and toured around. And one summer, I just got tired of doing that. And I was down there writing bad songs. And so I drove to Nashville and started writing.
Look, no more rock for me. I'm going to the country music capital of the world.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't mean to go no more rock, but when I came up here, the first song I demoed got cut, and it was a hit single on Shelby Lynn.
That was this song right here, Things Are Tough All Over.
Yes, things are tough all over.
And I got a publishing deal. And then at the end of that 3-year publishing deal, I started a company with Scott Hendricks called Big Tractor.
And that was a super successful venture, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. And while I was at Big Tractor, I started producing Chris Ledoux and Trace Atkins. And then that started other things. And
well, you get relationship. That's a cool thing I always think about Nashville. And in my head, when people are listening to this podcast, it's because they're aspiring songwriters or like me, they just love the idea of a songwriter. And they're wondering, what would it be like if I moved to Nashville and I tried to do this? To me, this community is a very much a how can I help you kind of environment. Have you had that same experience or have run into?
Yeah, when I got here, I mean, everybody was open-minded and real giving with everything. Everybody was pulling for each other. I found it to be just a perfect community to jump in. And if I wanted to act like an idiot, people were glad I did. And if I wanted to be a serious songwriter, people were glad I did.
Yeah. Well, let's look at the songwriting side, because usually what we'll do right at the beginning of the podcast is talk about what that rule that might kind of just always be there in your head is about how you get onto a song. Like what it is. What would you tell a new songwriter is your writer's rule?
I don't book 2 writes a day.
You don't want to bog yourself down with like thinking about the next write when you should be focused on whatever you do in write number one.
I believe that as soon as I start overthinking it and trying too hard or panicking during a write, I've lost it. The songs are all around me. If I just keep all the windows open, I'll end up being the victim of a song. It'll come in and write itself, and I happen to be there.
Does it happen in the room a lot of the time with the other writers, or are you out walking around? Are you a person that writes down song titles? Because I really like to follow that.
I keep titles and scenarios. Of course, I used to do it on a yellow pad in the car, and now my phone is just loaded. And when an artist is in my room, I'm trying to figure out if they're mad at their teacher, their mom, their dog, whatever is going bad in their life or good, to try to find a title. If they don't have one, then I'll listen to what they're saying until they say something that tells me there's the song. What you just said is where we're going to live for the next 5 hours.
And are you the one that you kind of inspired the conversations that happen in that room? Are you the instigator?
New artists are usually pushing 20. You know, they haven't had a lot of experience yet, so I just try to make them feel like it's a free space. You know, you can say anything. There's no mistakes. You can't make a wrong turn, and eventually they open up.
And how long do you usually have, like, a conversation? Well, how long you're sitting there, not really even worried about the music yet?
30 minutes.
I keep hearing that. I see in my head, I'm not a writer, so I didn't know this. I thought you, like, you go in, and you go, all right, guys, what should we start on a C? Start on the one, and then you write a song. But I hear that over and over, and I've learned that. I think it's cool that you really do have to create that kind of space first.
And when we get an idea, not even a title, just an idea, I ask them emotionally, what does that feel like with your right hand on a guitar? That idea, is that moving? Is it a shuffle? Is it 6/8? What is it? And they start kind of moving around in the seat, and that gives me an idea where their heart's going.
So you know if you're going ballad or mid-tempo or something fast and crazy. What's one moment where you were surprised, maybe blown away by one of the new artists?
Someone pitched me a kid named Rebecca Lynn Howard.
I don't pay myself into corners anymore. In a brittle heart of clay, threw my brushes away. The tools of the trade that chain your memory to me are out the door. I don't pay myself into corners anymore.
She was 17 or almost 18, and I listened to her a couple of demos, and they said, she writes some by herself. So I said, and I listened, and I said, well, send her over. And the first time I wrote with her, I was pretty swept away with...
Do you remember what came out of that session?
Yeah, we wrote a song that got cut on by Lila McCann, and I don't remember the name of it. And we wrote a lot of songs until we wrote Forgive.
Just expect me to forgive. Oh, that somebody big word for such a small man, and I'm not sure I can. Cause I don't even know now who I am. It's too soon for me to say forgive.
You know, I'm not usually surprised. That one was a surprise.
Yeah.
I think the first time I wrote with Billy Gibbons, that was a surprise because he's really smart and really well-read and eclectic.
That one that you were going in and you already had a preconceived notion of who he was?
Somebody hooked us up in a two-day notice, and he showed up at my studio and walked in, and we just started writing. And I realized really quickly you have to catch things come out of him on tape when they come out because he's not going back. And it's pretty fluid.
How is it with you? Do you work on a song in the room and then leave it in that room until you all get back together? Or are you kind of somebody who can't let it go until you feel like you
can't let it go until I'm done?
So even if you walk away from a co-write, you go, I'm just going to play with this on my own and then send it off to him and go.
Yeah. I usually get done that day and I don't go fast. That's my rule. I don't book two writes a day. Usually these days there's an artist in the room, not necessarily another co-writer. The other rule I have is that I try to get their vocal on tape that day in case I don't see them again.
And is it because they have something particular that you like about that vocal, or is it just that you don't
have their vocal, I can make a record.
Oh, so you get a really strong production.
I do a scratch guitar, and then I get as much time as I can get out of them trying to sing the song an hour after it was written. And usually it needs to be resung, but I've made records from the day we wrote them before.
Let's go to someone who can probably do a pretty good work tape version of a song. Carrie Underwood?
Yep.
My hotel in Manhattan holds more people than our town. And what I just paid for dinner would be a down payment on a house. I'd rather be tipping cows in Tulsa than hailing cabs here in New York. But I ain't in Sakona anymore.
Just the easiest town name in the world to say, Chakota, Oklahoma. I remember when Carrie first started hitting the scene and people were like, Chakota, like you don't know how to.
Yeah.
Who was in that room with you when that song became a song?
That was a writer's camp, right? Put together just a few weeks after she won American Idol. And she was in, we commandeered a studio north of town, kind of a big complex, and she was introduced to us the first morning. We were there for 3 days, and she would go room to room and say, I like the idea, I don't like the melody. Go to the next room and say, I love the verses, I don't like the chorus.
And this is shortly after Idol?
Yeah, immediately.
You know what? That, to me, says why she's successful. If she was that strong about how she felt about the music already and not scared or intimidated in those rooms, that's interesting.
Well, she kind of just went from room to room.
Okay.
And when she got to mine, Angelo and I were sitting in there. I hadn't seen the show, so I was trying to gather information on her. And when she came in the room, I said, well, just tell me where you're from. And she said, I'm from Shakota, Oklahoma. I said, well, that rhymes. Tell me more about the town. And so she just told me a bunch of stuff. Angelo and I wrote it down. It's got one red light. Her dad had a truck. It burned down one time, you know, that kind of stuff. And then I don't think we saw her again. But
you guys went to work.
Oh, yeah. We wrote the song.
And was it that day?
Yeah.
To me, is that fun for you to like look back and go, man, I was there right at the beginning of that career in a really interesting place?
Yeah. I love writing camps because I like to be on a time frame. I like the sense of competition and everybody's aiming. I mean, it's like when there's a greatest hits album, there's one or two songs making that record.
Yeah.
And so your chances of getting on that record are 10 times smaller than they are anyway.
Did you realize what a power juggernaut Idol was at that time too? So you knew that record would actually sell because you got built-in fan base.
Yeah. It was one of the last, I mean, I think it sold about 8 million. And that was one of the last times we heard a number like that around here.
And that's it. You bring that up now in an interesting point in music because so many people are hoping that very soon Congress will pay attention and there'll be a bit of a digital revolution for the writers where you guys get compensated for what you do, which I think I've made it clear. I love the writers. That's what I want
right.
is to see music continue to be created by creative, talented people, not just whoever has the funds to do it on the side. Would you tell somebody who wants to get into this business, yeah, come here and do it. It's worth it.
No, I'm never tell anybody that. If they tell me they're interested, then I tell them to let me listen to some of their stuff, and I tell them if they should sell their paint gun or not, or stay in Iowa,
yeah,
or wherever.
And
there's every once in a while, I hate to be the guy that says drop everything and move here. I just say you have what it takes, and it's up to you. That's like when a parent says, should my kid go to college or just hit the streets? I don't answer that question.
And what's the percentage you think of the people that you hear that you go, yeah, you've got what it takes?
5% maybe.
And then what does a good life look like for a writer these days? Can you have it? You can have a pretty good, successful career, right?
Well, you used to be able to be successful if you had 5 or 6 album cuts a year, and you can't keep a publishing deal with 5 album cuts.
You need singles.
You need singles. It's singles or bust. So when I got here, there were several thousand pro signed writers, and I would bet there's not 1,000.
I heard
now.
It's a tenth of that now.
Yeah. Almost. I mean, I saw a well-known middle-aged publisher with a Home Depot apron on the other day.
It's frustrating.
I mean,
and
that's true.
That's a huge bummer.
Yeah. So I suggest if you're a great writer and or a great artist, come here. But there's not as many opportunities as there were. And that's why there's so many songwriter schools and colleges turn engineer school, because they need work.
Oh, so these guys, they're going in there. They're professors now. Well, your rule is don't book more than one write a day. That means there is a limited number of chances to write with people who've already ingrained themselves in the industry. So what if somebody new is coming in and they're trying to work their way into their career? Yeah. They're talented. When they get to Nashville, what should their first move be to start the steps to success?
Go where everybody hangs out and writes. I mean, shake hands and smile at everybody. I tell every young artist I work with, when you're walking through Starbucks, make eye contact, then pull out the smile, and if the smile leads to a handshake, do it. Because if that person's not a writer or an artist, their mom, their dad, their brother, their uncle, somebody close to them is, and you're missing an opportunity.
And do you co-write with newbies in town?
Yeah, I do. I try to write with newbies if they're really close to the artist or the artist themselves, because I mean, my favorite co-writer is Richard Marks, and it's hard for us to write a song that we can get cut if there's not an artist in the room. And those days are like, after a month or two of writing with artists and younger writers, when somebody like Richard and I get together, it's like someone's taken off the leg weights. We don't have to talk.
It just matters.
Start writing. Man, it's so relaxing to just freewheel like that.
Do you remember the first song that you wrote that you were like, I wonder if I should be a writer?
No, I don't.
Do you remember your first idea of writing bad songs
as a kid in high school and as a rock drummer in Memphis, and I knew I wanted to write songs, and they were still bad.
But that was in high school. You already knew that music was in your blood, and you wanted to do it. And was that just all on your own at that time, or did you work with the band?
No, I was playing drums in bands when I was in high school and played all the bars in Memphis, rock clubs, R&B clubs, Roof of the Peabody, just every kind of format you could play. And then I came here with my bread truck full of drums to be a songwriter.
When you got here, what was your first move?
My first move was...
Because you got that. You got your song cut really quick.
Yeah, I was playing drums in a funk rock band, and the singer knew the engineer at MCA Music. And he called him and said, can you get my drummer an appointment? He's got a couple of country songs. And the engineer there at the time was also a good songwriter, Tom McHugh. And he got me a meeting with Al Cooley, who was the head creative director there. And I was meeting with Al for about 25 minutes. And he kept saying things about kangaroos and down under and wallabies. And I said, who do you think I am? And he looked at his paper calendar and he said, well, aren't you so-and-so from Australia? And I said, no.
Listen to the accent.
Well, who are you? And I said, well, I'm Trey Bruce. He goes, what do you do? I go, I write songs. He said, I'll be the judge of that.
Yeah.
I played him three songs. He ran down and got his boss.
Wow.
Said, we got to sign this.
That's acoustic? That's a guitar in a room you sang to him?
A cassette in the room.
Do you get nervous when you're sharing a new song with someone still? Or are you good with it now?
I love it.
My wife's calling. Sorry. Doesn't she check the calendar? I got to remember to take this out of the podcast, by the way. She listens all the time. When you do have a new song now for yourself that you love, what's your move? Because you've obviously had decades and decades, and you moved, by the way, you've moved past the company where we last left your biography, and you moved on after how many years with
Big Tractor?
With Big Tractor. You went,
there 11 or 12 years, and then a good buddy of mine at in L.A. had just left Warner Chappell and started working at Chrysalis, and he called me and wanted to know if I wanted to jump over to Chrysalis, and basically if I could have another joint venture. Big Tractor was a Warner Chappell joint venture that Scott had, and then I went to Chrysalis, and they let me have autonomy to sign artists, and so I signed John and T.J. Osborne while they were teenagers. I signed Cree Harrison at 14. I signed Chris Jansen at 17.
Jeez.
And Charlie Worsham as a senior at Berkeley.
Where do you find all these people?
I just found them around town.
I mean, but they're undeniable talents. Every time we talk about Chris Jansen, for some reason, he just stands out to me.
You know,
he can do anything in a moment.
You know, I went to hear a girl from Belmont across the street from Tootsie's. I paid my $15 to park, and I went ahead and made the block.
Yeah.
So I made the round twice. And the second time I went in Tootsie's, I went upstairs, and he was 17. And he was back. He was playing Hank Sr. songs. And I got in the corner, and I sat there for about an hour and a half. And the manager of the bar called me the next day and said, I saw you watching that kid last night. You want to meet him? And I said, yes. So I went down there that day and met him about 3 o'clock in the office upstairs. And he was pretty cocky like he is now, and I said, so, hey, Chris, I'm Trey. So what do you want to do? And he points out the window at the building across the street. He goes, I want to play over there.
Uh-huh. Building Bridgestone. Was? Bridgestone Arena.
Yeah. So I signed him and spent 4 or 5 years developing him. Chrysalis got sold 5 years after I got there. So it didn't last long. But in the first year and a half, I signed.
Pretty elite names there.
Yeah. I mean, John Osborne was a junior at Belmont, and I gave him a publishing deal, so he quit. But and then TJ's brother, so I signed him too.
Yeah.
At that point, the only thing I could prove that I knew how to hear an artist was on Rebecca Lynn Howard. So, but after that couple of years, I decided to trust that I know one when I hear it. I think I know one before I even hear him sing now.
Right, yeah, you'd see in their face the way they walk
it's
or something.
It's really weird.
Is that right?
And I went into development rehab for a couple of years. After Chrysalis, I was kind of worn out. So, but now I've got another crop that I'm pretty proud of.
Who would you want to name names?
Jenna Renee, Paulina Jane.
You know, I know some of these names, right?
I know you know Paulina, yeah.
Paulina comes in here and does 10-minute tune for us.
Oh, yeah.
And as a musician, awesome. As a person, awesome.
Yeah.
So what's her next move? What do you encourage her to do?
Well, I encourage them all to their not to wait on a label to validate them. Tell all my young artists, if you don't have a distributor, distribute. If you don't have a publisher, publish. And on down the line.
And do you write with all of them too?
I write with all of them just to get them started. I mean, I met Paulina when she was in the 9th or 10th grade. And some of them need me more than others. And one thing I kind of encouraged Paulina to do, I probably haven't written 4 or 5 songs with Paulina. I told her when she first got here that she's doing something that's kind of fresh, particularly with her cadence. When you get in a room with most pro writers, they're going to tell you what they think you should do. And you have to do what you want to do. And right now, they're going to kind of push you around a little bit. So just write by yourself for a while and get used to knowing that you're this good. And now when she's writing with other pros, she can control the room, which is hard to do.
Well, she comes in here. So for anyone that's listening and doesn't know what 10-minute tune is, when we do a 10-minute tune here on the show, you come in with no idea about what you're going to write about that morning.
Yeah.
And then we set a timer. And the second that we turn on the mics on the morning show on Ty Kelly and Chuck, you got to be ready to sing this song about whatever topic a listener threw at you this morning. And she can do it. She can write. And I wonder if she could have done that before you guys started working together. Because there has to be a certain kind of confidence.
I think so. When I met her, she was a leader. I mean, the day I met Paulina, she cold called me on the internet, said, I'm going to be in town with my mom. I'm a fan. Will you meet us? And I just did. And when I walked in the hotel lobby, somewhere up in Hendersonville or somewhere, she was in the lobby playing for construction workers.
Do you remember seeing people that you thought, hey, maybe these guys are artists, but then they turned into songwriters because naturally, for some reason, they wanted to do more than box themselves in with a brand?
Yeah, I don't know if I made a conscious choice not to take record deals to be a songwriter, but I see some now that I don't think they're actually making the choice as much as they're realizing they might not be a star.
Well, even better, let's talk about you. I was hoping you'd say that, but I didn't want to force it on you, but I think there's something to be said for the freedom that comes with not having to always stay true to what your fans expect from you. As a songwriter, you get to go a lot of different directions.
I mean, I'll ride the Velvet Revolver bus for a week, or I'll write with Katy Perry or whoever, or Randy Travis or Carrie Underwood or Leanne Rimes. I'm not chained to that same song every night.
Is it fun for you to jump and try a different piece of your personality?
Yeah, because being a rock kid from Memphis, I don't really remember if we had country music in Memphis when I was growing up. I mean, a serious rock kid.
You started there, but it was a shift.
I was a Sabbath, Rush, UFO kid.
That's a harder rock.
Serious knuckle-dragon rock.
To this.
It's like just before dark, jump in the car, buying ice cream, see how far we can drive before it melts.
It's how your love makes me feel. That's Diamond Rio, right?
Yeah.
So... You're talking about like Sabbath, da da da, and then all of a sudden you're very happy in music right there.
Yeah, I love music. I don't think there's bad music. I think there's great songs, good songs, and bad songs. I mean, I love hip hop. I love rock. I love traditional country. I love new country. The only thing I don't like is lazy songwriting. I don't care if it's hip hop or country.
Well, is there a theme that tends to drive you? Is there like an emotion that tends to catch you or that you feel the most inspired by?
I'm usually surprised every day when I come up with an idea which way it's going. I mean, left to my own devices, like any writer, you have a sweet spot that you're going to go to where you almost plagiarize yourself over a period of 10 to 20 years. But
what do you consider that for you?
There's some sort of cross between Springsteen's Tunnel of Love album and Dylan's Love and Theft album. Just pretty introspective. It's kind of a stream of consciousness. But if I'm in the room with an artist, or I have a script or whatever, if you need a song about an apple riding a horse,
yeah, as most
I'm not
do.
Precious. I'll write it.
when you go in with a room with Katy Perry, you mentioned Katy Perry. I didn't know that. That's kind of awesome. If you're like on a bus with Katy Perry or whatever, do you listen ahead of time to their music to try to put yourself in a space? Or do you like you said, no rules when I go in there? I don't want to know anything. I just want to come in there and find what finds me.
I'm not good at it, but at least by that morning before the ride, I tell myself I've got to look at this. It's coming up. And then I usually don't. And then the last minute, I'll research it a little bit. because a lot of times the tip I get is not right. When the artist gets there, they go, who told you that? And I go, well, so-and-so, your manager. And they go, no, I don't want to do that anymore.
So you'd rather go with your gut?
Yeah, I want to go where they are that moment, because artists change, especially at the age of artists that we write with now. They're not into the same thing 3 months later.
Outside of yourself, Trey, what's the song that for you just epitomizes great writing? I can edit. You take all the time you want.
Built Me.
Miranda's song?
Yeah. I didn't write it, but I think it's a good lesson for artists that, like so many, are hell-bent on writing their whole record. Miranda's a good writer, and she can write some by herself, but she was smart enough to write the best song she could get her hands on that day. And you can't, I don't care if it's me or Jeffrey Steele or Gary Burr, we can't write 12 songs better than we can find in Nashville. 4 of them we can't write. Right. And so every artist should do that, because Miranda started getting Vocalist of the Year. I mean, she'll ski behind that boat for years.
And what is the greatest compliment you've ever received as a writer?
I don't know.
Do you like awards? Do you like when an artist tells you they want that song? Do you like when somebody you care about finds a connection for it?
You know, I've gotten letters from people, fans of Randy Travis or whatever, saying that song did this for them or that for them. And I always save them, and they always mean something. And then sometimes I see where I'm referenced by other people. But I don't really think about it. Someone says, what's your biggest song, or what's the biggest moneymaker? I don't even know how many cuts I've had. I know it's more than a couple hundred, but I usually don't keep up with it.
Do you keep them somewhere, though? Like, do you have a, you know, just songs you've written file on your computer?
I've tried to keep up. I've tried to make sure I have them all somewhere, even if I do start filing them on an external hard drive. I've got them.
Have you been disappointed ever when somebody produces your song? Because to me, I cannot go. Really, you have?
Yes.
Where did that happen?
About 3 years ago, Alabama cut a song I wrote by myself, and I didn't care for the record.
It wasn't the way you'd put it in your head.
It wasn't the way I put it on tape. They changed some words. Some they asked me about, some they didn't. The melody was kind of linear'd out some, and it's the only time I heard one that I thought, that one's not killing me.
See, I've got writers around me, and I hear their work tapes a lot. And so for me, when I hear the song, I go, oh, I love that. And then I'll hear it produced, and a lot of the time, it destroys it for me. I love nothing more than an acoustic scratch tape.
Yeah, that's a great guitar vocal is good. I mean, I've Look Hart No Hands was a guitar vocal.
It stays pretty true to that, right, on the full produced version? You don't think so?
No, the guitar vocal was live. I was playing guitar, Russell Smith was singing, and young writer Gary Burr was walking down the hall, and we got him to sing background part, and we pitched it 3 days later to Kyle Lanning for Randy. And I mean, it's just a guitar vocal, and they put this little islandy flip in the back of the drum groove that's really nice. I mean, that was a life changer.
Randy's voice is the voice, though, I would think that you'd love to hear on a song if you're a writer.
Yeah, because you don't get many like that.
Crazy.
Especially.
But you did get many. You didn't get just one song with Randy Travis.
I had 5 or 6 by him. And the ones that I wrote with him, he never cut. But I do remember that the first time I wrote with Randy and he started singing the song back to the cassette recorder, I thought, holy crap, that guy has swallowed a whole rack of outboard gear, because it sounded, my name is Randy Travis. It's just like, what?
Yeah. You go to these tracks and it's just like this voice that no one can touch.
Yeah.
Have you written a song that you wish somebody would have grabbed onto and they never did?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man, I can't tell you. Some of them are just perfect for a couple of artists, or maybe they're so global, they're perfect for anybody. But then they don't get cut. Spirit of a Boy, Wisdom of a Man was 7 or 8 years old when Randy cut it. So, yeah, there's always songs that, you know. These days, sometimes I think we have to make the demo so much like the artist we're aiming at, that if we don't watch it and that artist doesn't cut it, then we're kind of...
Is there a value in just going back and cutting a new demo, different production?
If you get it cut, there is. Or you can go back and strip some things off. Like if you're aiming for Tim McGraw and he passes, or his wife, his A&R, his producer's wife, Missy, passes, then you can go back and trim some things off, maybe add some background vocals and change the singer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, stuff like that.
I would think there's probably a way to do that so that you get to sell that song a couple different directions, right?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Trey Bruce, your writer's rule was do not book 2 writes a day. Do you have another write today? Do you have a write today?
No.
Okay.
No. And
if you did, what would you go write about today?
I was working on something in the car on the way here, and I can't tell you what it is.
Do you have it somewhere? Is someone humming it outside for you?
No, it's on my phone. I heard it at I was at an intern fair at Belmont the other day, and a buddy I was standing there with, he said something, and I filed it, and about 30 minutes later, when there were no interns standing around, I told him what he said, and I said, I'm going to work on that and let you know when I think it's in a spot where I want to bring in a co-writer.
How far is that spot for you usually?
It depends on who says it. I mean, if it's somebody that I know, because when you're writing by yourself, there's no one to second guess you and tell you that won't fly.
Mm-hmm.
And I do a lot of that. And then I bring in a co-writer if I don't finish it pretty quick, or if it depends on who it is, if I think, man, that guy's got some melodies I'm never going to think of, mm-hmm. or whatever. I wrote Whisper My Name in the car by myself, and it was years later that someone pointed out that I only used the letter A for a rhyme in the whole song.
So does that make you go, I should never just do that by myself anymore? I got to run
flying.
It past one person.
You know, going down a hill, white knuckle, no brakes, no idea what the title's going to be.
Awesome.
And you just land on the verse twice and you say it and go, well, heck, that's the title. I had no idea. I love that.
For the record, Trey, I feel like I could probably ask you to stay here for another 3 or 4 hours. Because like from there, now I'm like, well, geez, how often does that happen? How often do you get, you know, going downhill, no brakes? But I will wrap it up. We'll just do one more question. If somebody wants to come to Nashville and they consider themselves a songwriter, but they also consider themselves an artist, what direction would you push them toward?
If they came here to be an artist, work at that 110%, and then learn how to write as you go. Don't think your writing has to keep up with you learning how to be an artist.
Keep in mind, okay, so you could do both. So you're not pigeonholing yourself and your brand.
No.
You can write for others if you come in.
And then watch the signs. If someone says you're really an artist, and I do this, I tell them, you know what? There's artist writer and there's writer artist, and then there's the one in the middle that's perfectly both. Like Rebecca Lynn Howard doesn't have to sing a note; she's a songwriter.
Uh-huh. And Paulina Jane. What is she?
Paulina Jane is an artist writer. And then there's artists like George Strait that 50-plus number one songs he didn't write. He must just be an artist.
Yeah.
You know, and
he's doing shows where he does now 30 number one hits night one, 30 number one hits night two.
And those guys are on their 15th and 20th albums, Reba, Trisha, Tim McGraw, Kenny Chesney, don't write their records.
So don't be afraid to be the one that you are or the combination that you are.
Cut the best song you can find. And if you came to be an artist, be one. And then worry about songs later because they're everywhere.
But hey, if you came to be an artist, you're not getting on this podcast.
That's right.
Take that. Trey Bruce, thank you, man.
You bet, buddy.